Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 25th of June. Because he has already decided to give up public financing, Senator Barack Obama has done quite a few things to beef up his campaign the last few weeks. He's added several people to his advertising campaign. He plans a big TV campaign that will go beyond the 18 states where ads are running already. Future commercials may include the Olympics, smaller cable networks like MTV and Black Entertainment TV. He is also sending paid staff members to all 50 states. He decided to give up public financing, and it means that his budget, he needs to raise quite a bit and will be doing some fundraising himself. His budget for the rest of the year could exceed $300 million. Obama's statement was this: "It was not an easy decision because I support a robust system of public financing of elections, but the public financing of presidential elections as it exists today is broken, and we face opponents who've become masters at gaming this broken system." McCain's campaign and Republican National Committee has been fueled by contributions from Washington lobbyists and special interest PACs. And we've already seen that he's not going to stop the smears and attacks from his allies who are running so-called 527 groups who will spend millions and millions of dollars in unlimited donations. McCain campaign communications director Jill Hazelbaker says Obama has revealed himself to be just another typical politician who will do and say whatever is most expedient for Barack Obama. The true test of a candidate for president is whether he will stand on principle and keep his word to the American people. Obama has failed that test today, and his reversal of his promise to participate in the public finance system undermines his call for a new type of politics. We're going to look at this issue the first hour of our program today. We will have two guests with us. Jeff Milo is joining us, professor in the Department of Economics and Truman School of Public Affairs at the University of Missouri, Columbia, adjunct professor in the Department of Political Science, also a scholar in the Center for Applied Economics in the Kansas University School of Business, and a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. A little later, Stephen Wiseman will join us, and Stephen is Associate Director for Policy at the Campaign Finance Institute and author of A Culture of Deference, Congress's Failure of Leadership in Foreign Policy. We'll be welcoming your phone calls. This is an issue that we've talked about really many times over the years, and I'm sure that you have thoughts about it. Was Obama wise in giving up the public financing system? Is it broken or not? 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. And send an email if you'd like. That is talk@WPR.org. Professor Jeff Milo, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you.
Is the system broken, as Senator Obama has said?
Well, I guess to answer that, you need to have some consensus on what the system is supposed to do. It's supposed to be a voluntary system, so the fact that some candidates choose not to participate would not be a signal that it's broken, but there are some folks who take that as a sign that that's a problem, that unless everybody's participating, the public financing system is broken. The other typical symptom that people point to say the public financing system is broken is the existence of outside groups, 527 mm-hmm. organizations, and sort of people skirting the law to have their say in the political debate. This is something that's guaranteed by the Constitution. The you know, the most recent round of campaign finance reform, the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, explicitly allowed for outside groups to engage in political speech as long as it wasn't clear advocacy for or against candidates. And so to the extent the public financing system has to meet the constraint of the U.S. Constitution, these activities have to be allowed. That's mm-hmm. how the system is designed. And so when people engage in those activities and participate in political speech and exercise their rights, that's not the system being broken. That's the system working the way it's designed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the rhetoric of the system being broken is influenced very much by this odd notion that if only we could pass this or that reform, all of a sudden politics would become, you know, a very polite and above board affair, and everyone would be inspired by it. And I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Do the Republicans have a lot more of those 527 groups than the Democrats?
You know, I can't tell you in terms of the numbers, but in terms of aggregate fundraising, my understanding is that the Democrats actually hold quite an advantage in terms of the total spending by 527 groups. In 2004, while the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, I think, received a lot of notoriety, in fact, Democratic-leaning groups seem to have outspent Republican-leaning groups about 4-1, and I think that's expected to be similar or even larger this year.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of Tad Devine saying that if John Kerry had decided to give up public financing, he would have been the president?
I don't know anyone, including reformers themselves, who votes for or against a candidate based on whether they participate in the public financing system. So I think that's just silly talk.
Mm-hmm. Now, McCain could get, although he had a bad April, I guess, his campaign could exceed $300 million. Does that put him way, way in front in the amount of money that he has when you look at it compared to McCain?
Obama
is right.
Looking.
What can
I say? Yeah, I believe he's already raised and spent on the order of about 200 and he's already raised about $280 million. So certainly he'll go beyond $300 million. And if you add the primary and general election together, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it pushes $400 million. Now. These numbers, one has to keep in mind that a lot of this money is spent on raising more money. And so, you know, if somebody gives me $100 and then I can use that in a fundraiser and spend it all and raise $101, I'm ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a bit of an exaggeration of the actual amounts of money being spent on advertising. So, for example, at this point, according to the latest financial disclosure reports, Obama has about $30 million in cash on hand left, a little more than that, about $33 million. McCain has about $31 million in cash on hand left. So despite big fundraising imbalances, Obama's raised more than twice as much as McCain. In terms of actual cash on hand that they would have to spend on activities, they're about the same point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's partly because Obama's spent a lot more on advertising in a more competitive race, but he's also burning through money in pursuit of other money, and that's something that all candidates do. So it's going to be a lot of money, but it's going to be a very close and exciting election, and these are you know, professional national organizations, and I suppose we should expect them to spend a lot of money. With about, let's see, in 2004, we had about 120 million voters. We'll probably have more than that this time around. So you're talking about a candidate spending about $4 per voter
most.
You know, I think I'm worth that much.
Oh, we're all worth more than that. What about the idea, though, and McCain has made something of this, and I think probably the American people, many of them feel this way as well, that perhaps Senator Obama should have stood on principle here. They're saying he didn't keep his word to the American people. He was going to meet with John McCain before deciding to opt out of the finance system and didn't do that. This is something that would clear up politics, get some of the money out of politics, and it runs contrary to who he claims he is as a candidate.
Well, you know, politicians are probably the last people to be talking about other people standing on principle. It's the nature of their business to be trying to make promises, promising all things to all people, and all politicians are pretty expert at choosing their words carefully. I believe, you know, if a representative for the Obama campaign were here, they would probably point out that Senator Obama didn't make an unequivocal pledge to participate in public financing. It was conditional on a number of things being agreed to by the Republican candidate. And lately, he's kind of expanded that list of conditions. But his idea is that, well, if both candidates, in a nutshell, his idea is that if both candidates agree that they will turn off the spigot of spending by outside groups, then they'll both, you know, then he'll participate in public financing.
I see.
Now, that's something that I think he well knows would actually be illegal. The whole point of outside groups like 527s is that they cannot coordinate with the campaigns. If they did, they would then be political committees. They'd be subject to campaign contribution limits and different laws. So these outside organizations, they're engaged in advocacy, not expressly for or against the candidate. They're issue advocacy. They cannot coordinate with campaigns, and so the candidates literally have no control. If they did exercise any control, it would demonstrate that these were actually illegal activities, that they really were coordinating. So he's conditioned his promise on something that I suspect he well knows can never actually happen. And so it allows him to kind of sound good that in principle he supports public financing, but he's doing very well raising money and much of it from small donors. It's a very remarkable phenomena. I think Obama refers to it as parallel public financing, lots of small donors giving him money that's coming from the public. And so from Obama's perspective, I think you could say that he chose his words carefully when he made those promises, so he's not really breaking his word. Now, from the perspective of people who have a heart for public funding, I think they heard what they want to hear and are trying to shame him into changing his mind. And, you know, but McCain has got the same issues where, you know, initially he's been known as an advocate of campaign finance reform, but in the 90s, I believe he voted against funding the presidential system. When he first started his campaign, he said that he would not participate in public financing. When his campaign didn't go very well, he secured a loan based on a promise to participate in public financing if he were losing. After doing better, he's now said he's not going to participate in public financing in the primary, but then he is in the general election. So nobody has clean hands here, that's for sure.
Right.
And that's par for the course in politics, of course.
And tell me, I'm confused about this. These 527 groups, did campaign finance reform give us a better understanding of who's in those groups, who they are, or do we not really know still?
Well, campaign finance reform can really only touch political committees, and those are groups that expressly advocate for or against candidates. And so there have always been vehicles for people to engage in what we might think of as a close substitute for political advertising, so-called issue advocacy. And so the possibility of using outside groups has always existed. They became more attractive when the most recent round of reform, the so-called McCain-Feingold bill, was passed and limited soft money contributions to political parties or unlimited contributions to parties. When you no longer have that vehicle to give large amounts of money and you still care passionately about politics, you look for the next best vehicle. Mm-hmm. So this thing that had always been around, the possibility of independent groups that you can give money to in unlimited amounts, and they're just constrained not to engage in formal advocacy, but we all know they can do things that are pretty close substitutes for that. That's why they became more popular. So there is some, through IRS regulations, there's some disclosure of who contributors are, and there's a number of investigative journalists out there. In terms of who exactly the donors are, that's something that I think I'd defer to your next guest, whose organization, the Campaign Finance Institute, does a bang-up job on those kinds of details.
Mm-hmm. Looking at this larger picture here for a moment, I believe it was, again, the communications director for McCain's campaign saying that the decision that Obama made will have far-reaching and extraordinary consequences that will weaken and undermine the public finance system?
Well, I think obviously that person has an agenda to try to make Obama look bad. But I do think that the Obama campaign may be opening up some people's eyes in a good way, which is that the Obama campaign, Obama is notable for being able to raise large amounts of money from small donors, and it's hard to say that he's being corrupted by that activity. And so people may be waking up to the fact that, gosh, you know, the legal limit for a contribution from an individual is about $2,300, and for somebody who's going to be raising $300, $400 million, how is that going to influence them in any way, a $2,000 contribution or a $200 contribution or a $20 contribution? Do we really need this structure to prevent the corrupting influence of a legal contribution to a candidate when the amounts individuals can give are so small relative to what a professional modern campaign spends? And so the ardor for public financing may pass some. And so that would be one interpretation of what's being said there, that people are kind of waking up to the facts because it's really a slap in the face. You can't deny it anymore, that when candidates raise lots of money from individual donors, how can they possibly be corrupted by the contribution of any single individual donor?
Mm-hmm. Let's take a phone call for you. We'll pause then and introduce our second guest for the hour. Tom is calling from Green Bay. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning. My comment is I'm glad Obama opted out of the federally funded campaign contributions, because I feel with Swift voters and that, my vote or my opinion is kind of undermined by them, because I don't have a lot of money to give to these people. I don't have a lot of money to give to put a TV ad on expressing my opinion. And I think McCain is making a bunch of lots to do about nothing just to make Obama look bad, but I don't think it's going to make a hill of beans when it comes to the final say on the whole thing.
All right. Thanks, Tom, for the call, Professor.
Well, I think what the caller said in terms of he doesn't have a lot of money to give to candidates, a lot of us feel that way. And even those of us who might have some money to give would rather not. We'd rather spend it on food or gas or something else.
Right.
But the voter, the caller does have something very valuable, which is his vote. And that's what all this money is chasing. And so we're all endowed with the same power in the election with one vote. And if we can choose to spend that vote wisely, you're going to have more effect than anybody who gives $1,000 or $2,000.
Isn't this cutting yourself off from the system going to force the senator, Senator Obama, that is, to go to all these Hollywood parties and to go to fundraising events? Won't he have to spend a lot of time on that instead of doing town hall meetings and a different kind of campaigning?
Yes, there will be some fundraising. However, again, because the Obama campaign's been so successful getting contributions over the internet, he's probably going to be spending less time doing that than other candidates typically would. So they've been able to raise money in fairly low cost, low hassle manner over the internet, but there would still be fundraising to be done. That's for sure. But again, I think the thing to keep in mind is the ultimate goal. You know, a lot of candidates, especially incumbents, complain about the hassle of fundraising, and instead of doing town hall meetings where they're meeting and greeting people, they have to go to rubber chicken dinners and try to raise money.
Yeah, right.
And that's true to a point, but the allocation of that effort is all directed toward one goal, and that's winning the election. And so if you were to just give campaign funds to candidates, it's not like they would suddenly spend less time trying to win election. They'd still be doing the things that they think work the best. If meeting and greeting individual voters and engaging in some, you know, high-minded campaign discussions really worked well, candidates would be doing that now.
Right.
So I'm not sure how much it changes the day-to-day activities of candidates. I'm sure some, but in the end, a modern campaign has got to run advertisements in the media, and it's got to have a lot of consulting activities supporting the campaign, and these things all cost money. So Obama's been a pretty successful fundraiser and doing it in pretty low-cost mm-hmm. ways relative to other candidates.
Yeah, it's a whole new way of campaigning. Quickly, an email before we meet our other guest. This is from Carl from New Berlin. The Bush crew stole the last two elections with dirty tricks, so Obama should do whatever it takes to win this one. Once in, he can try to fix the system.
Well, I think everybody thinks that the other side does dirty tricks in politics.
Right.
I think that's the definition of things. I don't know that he'd have quite the mandate to clean things up if he was perceived as winning by any means necessary. So, not quite sure if he should be quite so open or blunt about it, but. In the end, I'm sure if elected, Obama will turn around and offer some reforms to campaign financing.
We're going to continue our conversation and welcome to the talk Stephen Weissman, Associate Director for Policy at the Campaign Finance Institute, and we'll do that in a moment. And welcome more of your phone calls. Feel free to give us a ring, 800-486-8655, 414-227-2050. What do you think of Senator Barack Obama's decision to give up public financing? There are some people who are saying that they just don't care. It's not a big thing for him. Others are saying, really, this is a matter of principle, and he should keep his word to the American people. We'll take more phone calls, meet another guest. In a moment, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And joining our conversation now is Stephen Weissman. He is Associate Director for Policy at the Campaign Finance Institute. He has taught at Fordham University, the University of Texas at Dallas, Howard University, is a former legislative representative for Public Citizens Congress Watch, author of A Culture of Deference, Congress's Failure of Leadership in Foreign Policy. And staying with us will be Professor Jeff Malyo. Thank you very much, Professor Weissman, for being with us. Just your general comments first here. Did Obama do the right thing to help him win the campaign, or did he sacrifice his principles?
Well, I think that, I understand the political calculations that he was involved in, but I think he is in danger of having sacrificed his principles. The fact that he is the first major party candidate to go outside the public financing system in the general election, and that if successful, it's going to decrease the willingness of Democrats to feel there's an urgency toward reform of the public financing system, leads me to believe that he has sacrificed not only his principles, but one of his positions on this.
Mm-hmm. But is he more likely to win because of it?
I don't think so.
Really?
No, because, first of all, McCain, of course, had agreed to go into the public financing system, take the $84 million for 2 months, so Obama could have done the same thing. Both candidates are free to raise as much money as they can for their parties, and the parties can spend all of that money furthering the candidacy of the candidate. So Obama could have raised just as much money as he's going to raise now through the party. So I don't think that he just has a little more control over it because the party has to spend it independently of him. But, of course, his people are now influencing the party as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think he gained very much. He gained a little bit more control of the money, political consultants like that. So the other thing you have to remember about the presidential election is there's an enormous amount of free media. Everything is covered on a daily basis. There are debates between the candidates. There's all kinds of press. The importance of money in the general election is far less than in the primary period, where the media aren't, even though they've been pretty interested in the primaries, are not as intensely on a day-by-day basis focused on the election with or without any ads that the candidates may provide.
Hmm. What about his idea, though, that this is going to force McCain, that they're planning on doing, and they've already moved their volunteers and ads, they're going beyond 18 states, ads in all 50 states, paid staff in all 50 states, forcing McCain to compete in states that he probably would win, but he'll have to spend more money there now.
Well, again, Obama could have done that through raising money for the party. There's no need for him to have done that through collecting the money directly for himself. So I don't think that there's any huge impact. This is going to be a widespread campaign anyway due to the amount of free media that's available. So, again, I think that these are the rationalizations of political consultants who are the ones who, you know, are close to the candidate. They're the ones who will profit most from money flowing to the candidate.
Do you think that in some ways, if at all, if true, in what ways, he said the public financing of presidential elections as it exists today is broken and we face opponents who become masters at gaming this broken system. Is it broken?
Yes, but the general election portion is not very broken. Mm. It's the primary portion. For example, a candidate who wants to go into the public financing system has to agree to a spending level of about $50 million for the entire primary season, which is like a year and a half. For the general election, the candidate can get $85 million for just 2 months.
Hmm.
So what's broken is the $50 million part, not the $85 million part. And Senator Feingold said this when he said, and I agree with him, that Obama's decision was a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to some more phone calls. Craig from Onalaska is next. Hi, Craig.
Good morning. My comment on the topic today is that I think that the presidential race should be publicly funded, and that would be a mandatory requirement for the legislative branches. I know you haven't been really talking about that, but I think what we should do there is allow lobbyists to give whatever money they want to whatever candidates and whatever amounts. And the caveat there is the individual then cannot vote on any legislation that affects that lobbyist. And that's based on the fact that the judicial branch of our government is supposed to recuse themselves if there's a conflict of interest. And I think if a lobbyist gives a lot of money, that there is oftentimes a conflict of interest. And so I think my solution would take care of those problems.
Professor Milo, why don't you respond?
Well, the mandatory public funding would not be constitutional. I mean, you know, we've got this annoying thing called freedom of political speech and association, and you can't force people into a situation where they can't run their own political campaign. And even if we amended the Constitution and had mandatory public funding for candidates, you can't put tape over everybody's mouths. I mean, there's always, if you have free speech, there's always going to be a possibility for somebody to skirt this law and to say things that are a close substitute for campaign advertising. So, you know, the so-called loopholes in campaign finance reform are exist because the spirit of campaign finance reform goes against you know, the strong version of freedom of political speech, freedom of political association, and reformers and courts are always trying to sort of thread the needle on this, and there's always a way around things, and as, you know, time passes, politicians are very clever, and potential donors are very clever in figuring out how to get an advantage on the existing system. You know, the idea that the presidential campaign system is broken, to go back to a comment from the other guest, because there's only $50 million for the primary and $84 million for the general, well, that's exactly how it was designed. What's changed is circumstances. And I think this just shows that it's difficult to kind of engineer a political reform that's going to be well working under every potential circumstance that arises. And, you know, we're just not that smart and foresighted to do that. And so it's not that the system is broken. It's working exactly the way it was designed. Just circumstances have changed. They weren't foreseen. And now a lot of folks want to change things given what we know now. And next time around, circumstances will be different, and we'll hear again how the financing system is broken and needs to be changed.
Professor Wiseman, would you like to respond?
Well, I think I think it is, we can argue about semantics, but it doesn't work. And it's natural that legislation adopted in 1976, as the world has changed, needs to be updated. Congress has done nothing to update the public financing system, even as there have been changes in the way the primaries kind of get loaded up in the front. People have to have a lot of money right away. They haven't updated the system even for inflation. So it's natural, just like with every other piece of legislation, whether it's on education, whether it's foreign aid, anything else, that you need to have a regular updating and modernization and adaptation, and that hasn't occurred. But that shouldn't make us give up on the notion that there can't be campaign finance reform, or conclude that there can't be campaign finance reform. The system created in 1976 worked well enough for many years to attract all of the major party candidates, basically, into the public financing system. It began to break down only in the year 2000, when George Bush decided to go outside the system. So Ronald Reagan used the system, Walter Mondale used the system, and Bill Clinton used the system, Jesse Jackson used it, and for many years it did promote greater participation by candidates, gave people who not have even been considered as candidates the ability to get some messages out. John Edwards went into it the last couple of times, and Edwards certainly became a national figure because he was able to use it. So I think it's been breaking down, and therefore needed to be addressed. It should have been addressed before 2000, and should be addressed now.
Mm-hmm. An email here, gentlemen. Obama's explanation is a bit hollow. As a strong supporter of purely publicly financed systems, I'm thrilled that he is out of the system for the general election. With a huge advantage in cash that he'll have over McCain, Obama will expand the Electoral College map and help all the federal candidates down the ballot. The difference in the support for the Democrats this cycle versus the GOP reflects the fierce desire for change among many Americans and a recognition among the base of the GOP that their political have abandoned the core principles of the GOP and the conservative movement over the last 8 years.
Well, can I comment on that?
Of course.
I think that from people who favor the Democrats, obviously there's to see for a change the Democrats have a pragmatic advantage financially is certainly a form of delayed justice in view of a lot of the campaign finance totals of the past, but there's a price to be paid. A third of Obama's money, even though he's been the most successful small donor fundraiser to date, a third of his money has come from 1,000 and over contributions, and most of that has been bundled by a few hundred people. Some of them are bundling hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. That means they're going to their networks of business acquaintances and business colleagues and social acquaintances and asking them to give up to the maximum of $2,300 contributions. And they put their tracking number of this bundler on their check, and Obama knows this bundler got me $750,000.
And who are the bundlers?
The bundlers are wealthy people, basically. Most of them have been concentrated. We did a study of this at the end of 2007 at the Campaign Finance Institute. Most of the bundlers for everybody, including Obama, are concentrated in the finance, insurance, real estate, industry, and law.
Mm-hmm.
So these people will have probably increased access to, you know, because of the indebtedness.
Sure.
The bundlers' role may even, recently, in the last few months, with the popular enthusiasm and primaries, Obama was getting less money proportionally collected by these bundlers, but now they're going for the Clinton bundlers, they're going for renewing their bundlers who can begin to collect more money from people separately for the general election. And if you get an Obama elected with, say, 45% of his money collected from large donors and bundlers, there may be a price to pay in terms of the amount of reform.
Mm-hmm.
That could be obtained, and I'm not, you know, so What I'm saying is that I think that Obama was not facing a desperate situation. He could have been successful in terms of getting the money joining the public financing system, helping himself out by collecting some money for the party, which would perhaps put some obligations on him eventually, but a little less directly. Would preserve the principle of the campaign finance, public financing system. But by choosing not to do so, he may be incurring direct obligations that could limit to some extent his platform.
Right, I understand that. Do you agree with that, Professor Milo?
Well, one of the points that Dr. Weissman's made a couple times now that I do agree with is that I do think that Obama's prospects in the fall election are probably little changed by whether he took public financing or continues on the road that he's on, for all the reasons Dr. Weissman has said. However, it's not such a trivial thing, I think, that Obama is going to be in control of his own campaign spending. Because he'll then be deciding how to allocate it, which of his allies will get it, where the spending will be. And he becomes, I think there's a stronger base and case for him to be the present and future leader of the Democratic Party. Whereas if he's fundraising for other people and organizations, yes, they'll be grateful. Yes, he'll have some influence. But it's not quite the same thing as having the money in your own bank account and making those decisions about who you're going to, how you're going to spend it, and who you're going to favor with that money. So I think there is another practical advantage to the candidate. More control over the message as well is also useful. So, but I do agree that probably the outcome in the fall is unlikely to be much affected by the decision to pursue public financing or not. In terms of the issue on bundling and whether that's a problem or not, well, it's kind of a natural artifact of low contribution limits. And so you make it very difficult to raise money for a modern campaign if you have low individual contribution limits. And so anyone who has a talent at fundraising is very useful. And, you know, it's hard to imagine any kind of professional organization that wouldn't want to try to keep track of how people are doing, how successful they are, try to reward the people who do well at this. So, you know, the bundling phenomena, it's a natural outgrowth of very low campaign contribution limits. There are some examples of well-connected sort of Rolodex men, Johnny Chung comes to mind, who then sold their access. And so it's almost an outsourcing of the potential for corruption to the bundlers. And so one way around this might be to try to raise contribution limits to that would limit the value of these kinds of folks, not entirely, maybe not even much. Another is to try to, again, I think Dr. Weissman defines success of a public financing system by how many candidates choose it. I'd like to hear actually a more substantive definition of success of public financing. Is it higher voter turnout? Is it fewer negative ads? Is it greater trust in democracy? If it's simply whether or not candidates participate, well, then the answer to fixing it is quite easy. It's just offer so much money that, you know, it's a deal nobody can refuse. But why? Why do that? Does it get us some other good thing? And I don't think there's much evidence to that effect, that publicly financed candidates behave very differently or that there's some greater good that's accomplished.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
If I could just add
of course.
Point, just because I sort of have to leave.
I know you do.
I did want to make just a couple of quick
points.
In the all the recipes for improving public financing are trying not only to draw the candidates in, but to increase the weight of the small donors as opposed to raising contribution limits. And therefore, they basically, in mimicking in many ways other state and local public financing systems, the federal reforms that have been proposed would say that if someone gives $250 or less, then the public matching ratio would be changed. Right now, it's 1-to-1. It would go up to 3 or 4-to-1 to to increase the possibility that candidates would spend more time recruiting the small donors because they can get a much larger ratio of public matching funds for those small donors. The other question about the increased control, we agree. I agree that, Obama has some more control over the money, but we can't forget that he puts his people into the National Committee, which would distribute the party money, and that the people in the party know where Obama's advertising, what his message is. They're aware of it all, even though they can't officially coordinate with him. They can't use the same pollster. But basically, they know what the themes are. They know where the direction should be. And they could very easily, it seems to me, have achieved a lot of the purpose that he is trying to achieve. The final thing is, I think we all have to remember that money is not the only thing that wins elections and gets people participating.
Yes.
And that Obama had a terrific advantage over Hillary Clinton in the last few months of the primaries, and that didn't prevent Hillary Clinton from beating him in many of the major states,
mm-hmm.
even if she was outspent 2-1 or 3-1. The key here is not money, it's message. And one of the messages Senator Obama has had is he's not a flip-flopper, he's for change, he's principled. And anything that erodes that message, even if people claim, oh, no one cares about campaign finance reform, I think people do care, and anything that erodes that message could hurt eventually his campaign, not help it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Professor Stephen Wiseman, Associate Director for Policy at the Campaign Finance Institute. Professor Jeff Milo remains with us, professor in the Department of Economics and the Truman School of Public Affairs at the University of Missouri-Columbia, where he is also adjunct professor in the Department of Political Science. We're talking about Senator Barack Obama's decision to give up public financing and welcoming your phone calls and email. We're getting a ton of emails today. So we'll take a couple calls, do a couple emails. The show goes on. Our number is 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, the author of The Big Sort, Why the Clustering of Like-Minded America is Tearing Us Apart. Okay. Back to phone calls. Helene from Madison is next. Hi, Helene.
Hi. I'm wondering how much control does the guest feel that Barack Obama has over these soft money groups? For instance, I heard on the news recently on a featured program with the former campaign manager of Michael Dukakis' campaign that he had vetoed and absolutely forbade her to run an ad, as one of the major advisors had wanted them to do, exposing George H.W. Bush's affair, which was a long-standing affair with a woman that was known by many people in inner circles, and the name of the woman was known, and she had a staff position, et cetera, et cetera, and that he absolutely vetoed using that in his campaign, and that they were bound to follow that. Now, in this situation, if Barack Obama wants to limit what type of response will be made to criticisms against him, would he have the influence over the Democratic Party, but also these so-called, the swift boat type groups, if they wanted to answer back in a way that he didn't approve, or how would that affect it, whether he took public financing or not?
Well, the issue of accepting public financing would be irrelevant to whether he has any control over outside groups. Although I may come back on that in a second. Strictly speaking, the candidates cannot coordinate, control, veto any of those outside groups. And if they do so, that's illegal. And so the particular anecdote that the caller mentions, I heard of it, including the affair. I guess I'm, pop culturally illiterate here. But, that doesn't mean it's not done. Illegal things sometimes occur behind closed doors. But Obama really can't control what his allies say because they have free speech and because the law clearly says that if he does, that they're no longer
independent groups, their political committees, and they'd be subject to different laws. And so he would, you know, if he tried to exercise control, he would actually be breaking the law, and he'd be causing other people to break the law. And that's independent of whether he takes public financing. Now, here's where I'll go back on it. By opting out of public financing and assuming he can do very well in fundraising and running a very large campaign, doing a lot of advertising, he kind of gives vent to everybody who wants to support him. They can do it directly, subject to contribution limits. They don't have to rely on outside groups so much. And so it's possible it may take some of the air out of those outside groups. But, you know, to go back to the Kerry example with Swift Voters for Truth, I think I may have misinterpreted the question earlier, which is if John Kerry had opted out of public financing, maybe he would have had more money to then directly confront these outside groups and to counter their advertising. And so if Obama can do that, then that's, you know, he implicitly is controlling outside groups because people are giving money to him instead of outside groups, and he can respond to attacks from outside groups on the other side. So it's possible by opting out of public financing that he can do better. And this, our previous guest, Dr. Weissman, one thing we didn't get to chat about while he was on, is there's this odd part of public financing all around the country, whether it's at the state level or at the federal level, which is that candidates are subsidized in their campaign spending through tax money, but they have to agree to limit their spending. And the part of the problem with public financing is that limit on spending, which then can become a disadvantage to candidates.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason you have to condition a subsidy to fundraising on a limit on spending. If you want to make it easier for people to run for office, make it easier for people to get out messages that are a little unusual, you can still subsidize those candidates. The cap on spending comes from a different concern that somehow, you know, in some platonic sense, there's too much money in politics, that there's some ideal that we're off of. And that's where a lot of the sort of, unintended consequences of campaign public financing come about is because of these spending limits that then become outdated or circumstances change and they're no longer workable for candidates.
Thanks, Helene, for the call. Let's go to Aaron from Harvard, Illinois. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, you?
Doing well.
Good.
A point and then a question. I read Obama's books, and in looking at Obama, he seems to be a guy that starts with a decision, this is what I want something to look like, and then works his way backwards to how to get there. And he also seems to be a man that is very much concerned about being disentangled from other people to be able to make those decisions that he thinks are right. So I think the question I have is, how much of his decision-making to not be a part of this has to do with the fact that he doesn't want to have anything owed to anyone else so that he feels like he's free to make the right decision? And I can take my question.
All right, interesting question.
Very interesting, and that may be a very good point. I know if any of us were running for office, we would probably feel the same way. We don't want to be beholden to other people. We want to control our own resources and run our own organization. So that may well be a very important motivation.
What about his statement that he has discouraged his donors from contributing to a liberal 527 groups, and some of them evidently were already up and running for the 2008 campaign? Are they going to stop because he said, please don't do this?
Some might.
Somebody,
you think but, so? You know, I mean, what are you going to expect him to say? You know, please contribute to these groups that are going to make unfair attacks on John McCain. I mean, of course he's not going to say that.
Right.
Politicians often say things and you have to look whether they're winking or not.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can do this in 30 seconds. The largest part of campaign spending is TV advertising. Public owns the airwaves. Let's change the terms of the lease and require free advertising on TV.
Well, again, that's something that especially incumbents tend to like, that idea, because then they won't have to, you know, most incumbents are going to win election, especially in legislative elections. And so anything that makes it easier for them to run for office, they tend to support. I suppose you could do that, give people free advertising on TV, but not everybody watches TV, and you know, it's still going to be paid for in some way. You're giving away airtime, and so you're limiting the amount of revenue that stations can
right.
get, and so there are going to be consequences of it.
And on that note, we have to say goodbye. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us, Professor Milo. Professor Jeff Milo, professor in the Department of Economics in the Truman School of Public Affairs at the University of Missouri-Columbia. Thanks to John Anderson for producing this program and for on-air production as well. And thank you for listening.